98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo, the 4 o'clock reset. Brought to you by Collins Comfort Masters, proud home services partner of the Arizona Cardinals. 4 o'clock reset.
And away we go with the top stories of the day here on the Burns and Gambo Show. We will present them to you at 4 o'clock every afternoon here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. We start with the next opponent for the Cards, albeit after the bye week, and that's going to be the Chicago Bears. There were reports that surfaced today that the Bears were going to let their head coach Matt Nagy go after the Thanksgiving Day game against the Lions. Nagy today denies the story, says he hasn't talked with management about that at all. So there's a chance, if you believe the initial report, Gambo, that there could be a coaching change in Chicago, though Nagy clearly denies it.
No, he was about 16 minutes late for his media conference at Hollis Hall today. Showed in and just started to talk about the injury report and the practice schedule. And, you know, so there's a lot of speculation that he's going to be out, but he did not really comment on it at all. He just said that is not accurate.
Yep.
Well, he did comment. He said that is not accurate, and we'll see what happens, because there's a very prominent Chicago Sun-Times writer that says he's going to be out after this Thanksgiving game.
Tom Pelissero, to the first report, now it's fully out there. The Giants have fired their offensive coordinator, Jason Garrett. You have to wonder how much longer Daniel Jones is going to be the quarterback of the future for the G-men.
Second quarterback taken after Kyler Murray.
Yeah.
Right? Out of Duke.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you see all these teams that have looked at their quarterback and moved on from him, including the Cardinals, who drafted Josh Rosen and moved on. You look at these teams that have decided to move on, and you got the Giants sitting here. There was a funny thing last night when do you watch that Peyton Manning, Eli Manning thing?
I do. I didn't last night, but I typically watch the Manning cast, yes.
So, I mean, I kind of like that a little bit.
It's great.
And so he throws an interception off of one guy's helmet and into another guy's arms. And Eli Manning's like, oh, jeez, you know? And you just caught it all right there. Like, you just, Eli's just watching. He's like, oh, jeez. Like, and like, it's, you know, it was a great reaction from Eli watching him throw that interception. You know, it hasn't worked.
Yeah.
So they gave it enough time, and he's had enough starts under his belt, and Daniel Jones is not the future quarterback for the Giants.
Speaking of New York quarterbacks, Jets quarterback Zach Wilson has been cleared to return from his knee injury. He'll start against Houston on Sunday, and that's good news for the Jets. Both Mike White and Joe Flacco were put on the COVID-19 list today.
The Jets are going to have the 7th pick right now from Seattle, because that's how bad Seattle is.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I think when you don't have a quarterback, I think you should just take one in the first round every year. I mean, honestly,
until you get it right, yeah.
Because it doesn't matter until you get one. You could we drafted Saquon Barkley. Who cares? You don't have a quarterback. You could draft all these players, but if you don't have a quarterback, it doesn't matter. I mean, if I was a GM, I might honestly draft a quarterback every year in the first round until I get it right.
Yesterday's report became reality today. The Cardinals signed quarterback Trace McSorley from the Ravens practice squad. They cut third-string quarterback Chris Streveler, as Gambo had reported they would. Other roster moves today, including them cutting long snapper Bo Brinkley. There's been a lot of speculation that maybe that was in part what led to Matt Prater's struggles this past week against Seattle. Everything was off with the timing when it comes to the long snapper.
Yeah, and you know, it's possible. Matt Prater would never blame anybody but himself for missing those kicks. There was some wind, and he missed the kicks. But, you know, it's important for that kicker to have, you know, to have that setup, right? I mean, the snap and the hold, everything's got to be just the way he likes it. And Matt Prater's been great. He did hit a 50-something yarder. I think it was a 53-yarder in that game for the Cardinals. And he's been great for the Arizona Cardinals. He's been absolutely spectacular for them so far.
So we'll see what they do at the long snapper position. But our top story of the day today on the Burns and Gambo Show, 13 straight.
CP3 inbounds for Booker. 12 to shoot. He's going to pull up for three right side and hit nothing but the bottom of the net. And Devin Booker has his first three in a while. He's got 20 points on the night. And the lead is 15 again. 110-95 Suns.
They beat the Spurs 115-111. Their 13-game win streak very much intact. Gambo, that's the third longest win streak in team history. Tied for the third longest win streak in team history. Next up on that chart would be 15 in a row, which is what Nash and the crew did in 06-07. They've got the Cleveland Cavaliers coming up next. And last night, was all about DeAndre Ayton and was all about the bench. They came through big in the win against the Spurs.
They did. They did. I mean, that was, you know, another hard-fought game. San Antonio, you know, they hung around. They were down 15. It felt like the entire game. They were down 15, and yet somehow they were able to make a little bit of a run. They cut it to 5 at one point, then the Suns got it back up to 15. And then Murray had a basket at the end. He stole the ball from Chris Paul. Went in, got a basket, a layup, made it 114-111 with 15 seconds left. So they still had a chance right there, but they ended up fouling Booker at that point, and the Suns were able to put it away. This team's clicking on all cylinders. They don't want to say that, but they are. They're playing very well. At one point, I think I had them at 11 for 21 on three. After Campaign hit a three-pointer in the third quarter, they were 11 for 21 from three-point range. So, you know, they've got a good second unit. They got a good first unit. They got off to a slow start this year, but this team is playing great. And, you know, they haven't played the best teams in the league yet. That will come. But you got to take care of business against the teams you're supposed to beat. We always say that, and they've done that.
Yeah, they have done that. And DeAndre Ayton in particular last night, 21 points, 14 rebounds. He had 5 offensive rebounds. He did the bulk of his work in the first half where he had 14 of his 21. He had 9 of his 14 rebounds in the first half. He had 5 offensive rebounds, which for me is always one of the true measures of how engaged DeAndre Ayton is. And he took everybody by surprise early in the third quarter. Standing at the free throw line, he faked a dribble handoff to Devin Booker and instead spun to his left, put the ball on the floor, and took it very aggressively to the rack. After the game, Devin Booker said, "I have been telling DA I've been waiting 3 years for him to do that."
Yeah, I told him I've been waiting on that for 3 years. You know, some games I get a lot of attention. He makes quick, dynamic moves like that. It's tough to guard. It is tough to guard. So anytime he's aggressive like that and throwing his body into the defender and getting some contact, I enjoy it.
Yeah, go back. If you can find the play on Twitter, if you're out there listening or anywhere on YouTube or whatever, it's absolutely the right read that he made, but it was such an ultra-aggressive move by DeAndre Ayton because he put the ball on the floor and went right at the rim, and he made Jakob Poeltl and the Spurs, "Hey, deal with this. Deal with me." And it was they couldn't do it. It was the end one situation. It was a great play out of Ayton.
Yeah, and when he develops these moves, and there are so many moves out there that he hasn't mastered yet, that he will, and when he does, man, the sky's the limit for how good this guy can be. He seems very. I love the comment about him not being satisfied with the way he played against Milwaukee last year.
Let me play it for you. You want?
Yeah, play it. Play it, please.
I love it. Because now I'm aggressive, like I said from the beginning of the season, man. I'm trying to be more of a threat, you know. I've seen the flaws and the mistakes and stuff that I should have done in the playoffs and finals, especially the finals, you know. I didn't like the way I performed in the finals, and, you know, I'm trying to make a mark and trying to, you know, get used to certain things that I wasn't used to doing, but I'm used to doing because it's my play style as well, but. You know, just get my memory back on scoring the ball in many different ways. You know what I'm saying?
That's the one you were looking for?
Yeah, because there was so many great things that DeAndre Ayton did in the playoffs. And he's focusing on the things that he didn't do. And that's the telltale sign of a guy that's going to be great and wants to get better. How good was DeAndre Ayton against Denver, against the Lakers? Against the Lakers, he was maybe the best. All those Clippers. He was so great throughout the playoffs. But what he's focusing on is, "I'm not happy with the way I played against Milwaukee."
Yeah.
And you love to hear that. He's a guy not, you know, set in his ways and look at what I did and look at me and, "Nope, I don't like the way I played against Milwaukee. I want to get better." I love that. You got to love that.
Yeah. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, it's the bye week for the Arizona Cardinals, so you would think there wouldn't be that much to talk about. But when you're 9-2 and you've never won a game after the bye week if you're Cliff Kingsbury, there is a lot to talk about, including how they fixed that. You'll hear what the plan is next on the Burns and Gambo show.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo.
Yeah, it definitely does. We haven't played very well after the bye, so we did a lot of research this offseason.
Yeah, they did some research trying to figure out what to do, what that looks like, I don't know. But the Arizona Cardinals coming off the bye in 2 years, 2.5 years under Cliff Kingsbury, They have not won the next game coming off of the bye, and so that sounds like, Gambo, going to be one of the things that they work on while they've got the bye this week, is to understand why they lost to the Rams in year one coming off the bye, why they lost to the Dolphins in year two coming off the bye. It helps that you have a much better football team this year than you did those first two, obviously, but that's something that Cliff Kingsbury said they've done some research into studying and trying to figure out how to change that.
Yeah, I don't know what the, you know, I don't know what the answer would be. It would be interesting to see if they come off the bye and they win. Okay, what did you do differently? You know, what did you do differently? I think part of it is where they are in the standings. That itself, to me, is going to help them win that next game against Chicago, because these guys are all going to go to bed every night for the next couple of weeks, and you know, they're going to be thinking about a Super Bowl. They're going to be thinking about winning it all. A lot of players that have never been into the playoffs, and a lot of players that have never won a Super Bowl or participated in a Super Bowl. I mean, you have to be thinking about that right now if you're on this team. You're 9-2. You're going to the playoffs. You will have a chance to compete and maybe win a Super Bowl or get there. So, you know, that alone should motivate these guys to come out and kick Chicago's ass, take care of business. And the other thing is, like, you know, you're also looking at the top overall seed. You've got it now. You don't want to let it go. So, but there probably are some things, just like with the success they've had on the road, they've changed some things. There's probably, you know, practice times,
yep,
or, you know, making sure that guys do certain things while they're off, because you want to give them some time away, let them settle, but you also probably have, you know, things that you need them to do in order to come back in shape and ready to play.
Yeah, it's such a tricky thing. I mean, especially, and I know this shouldn't have anything to do with it, but because their bye week happens to fall during Thanksgiving, right? It's family time, and it's the big meal, and I don't know how out of their rhythm they're going to get. I know in years past, Kyler has talked especially about how coming back from the bye is just kind of awkward for him because he's not used to not playing, which is going to make this bye week especially awkward for Kyler, given that he hasn't played in a month, and it'll be his first game in 37 days, which is why it was really interesting to hear Jordan Hicks when he was talking about it after the game. Everybody says, oh, it's a great time for the bye. Guys got to heal. Guys got to rest. And that's probably the right answer. But Jordan Hicks said, you know, to be honest with you, I don't know if this is a good time for the bye, and here's why.
I don't necessarily think so. This is the way we're playing, how this locker room feels right now. You know, obviously it'll be nice to be healthy and get guys back, and but you know, you roll the ball out there, and we go out there, we're ready to go. And I, you know, that's the mentality of this team. It doesn't matter who we're playing, doesn't matter when we're playing. You know, it's about us. It's always about us.
Now, for being honest about it, that answer was given about 10 minutes after the Cardinals beat the Seahawks. They were probably still on a little bit of an adrenaline high, right, from that victory. Now that it's been a couple of days, maybe Jordan Hicks would answer the question differently. I don't know. I'm just saying, maybe he was kind of caught up in the moment when he said that. But you can certainly see his point, right, that, hey, I don't know if I want to stop playing right now. We're rolling the way we're playing.
Sure. I mean, I get that. And I think some of the guys that are, you know, that are really healthy probably feel that way. But they know that they've got to get they got to get Hop back. He's got a hamstring injury. They got to get Justin Pugh back. They've got to get Kyler, you know, close to 100%. That's what this bye is all about. I mean, you know, I know you were worried about the rust, and you should be, with Kyler having not played since the Green Bay game. I'm glad you get that soft landing like you talked about with Chicago. But the most important thing is to come out of this late bye. This is a late bye for them.
Yeah.
Come out healthy, because they're going to get, you know, you've got six games left, and you're probably going to get more guys banged up, you know, during those six games. So try to come out as healthy as you can. And I understand what Jordan Hicks is saying, but they need this bye.
Yeah, especially for guys. I mean, the guys that we know are hurt. Okay, you know, Kyler and Hop and et cetera, Chase Edmonds and guys like that. There are guys who are playing through stuff right now, and that's what Cliff was talking about when he was talking about Rodney Hudson yesterday.
Bye is coming at a really good time for Rodney, because he's been playing through a bunch of different injuries, basically, that he's been just toughing out. And so I think getting him rested up and healed, you'll see that cleaned up pretty quickly.
Yeah, Hudson, and what when he says you'll see that get cleaned up real quickly, he's talking about the low snaps, and he thinks the low snaps might have been a reason, or might have been a result, I should say, of the injury that Rodney Hudson has been kind of playing through. Because if anybody watched that game on Sunday, he was having a hard time snapping the ball out of shotgun, no question.
Yeah, no, you're right. There's no question about it. He was. And, you know, he'll get that clean. He's just too good of a player.
Yep.
I mean, you know, he's one of the best, if not the best, centers in the league. And, you know, if he's been banged up and he's hurting a little bit, you get a couple of those low snaps and different quarterback and everything like that, too. But he's too good of a player to have those mistakes continue.
You had the news yesterday before anybody else that Chris Streveler was going to get cut as the third-string quarterback. The Cardinals made that official today, making official that they've added Trace McSorley to the roster as their third-string quarterback. So, you know, Gambo had that yesterday afternoon, and it came to pass today. Something else that happened today as well when it comes to the Cardinals and their roster, they cut their long snapper, Bo Brinkley. And listening to kind of Cliff talk about it a little bit on Monday, he was asked directly if missing Aaron Brewer and having to go through some changes with the long snapper position might have affected Matt Prater and the three kicks that he missed on Sunday.
We're hoping we'll get Aaron back somewhere around that time frame, but no doubt. I mean, when you have a group like Aaron and Andy and Matt who had worked, you know, so many reps together at it, and then it changes, that's never easy. And that's just part of this league and part of this game, and we all got to find a way to get the job done regardless. But, yeah, it's not ideal when your snapper gets hurt.
That I don't know how much blame to assign Matt Prater's day on that, but it is interesting to think that they cut the long snapper a day after that game.
Sure. Sure. I mean, maybe there is something to it. Prater's always going to take the blame. Going to say it was his fault. He should have made the kicks, and he should have. But if the, you know, if the timing was off, right? The timing's everything. Okay? If those snaps were not, the timing wasn't right. Look, the holder's going to get it. He's going to put it down. But the kicker's going to time everything based on that. You know, you don't want to get the kick blocked. So it's all about the timing for the kicker. And if for some reason, if those snaps were a little early or a little late or anything like that, it throws off the timing of the kicker.
Yeah. Have you subscribed to the Burns and Gambo podcast? Subscribe right now on your iPhone or your Android. You'll never miss any of the show. It's just like a podcast, the Burns and Gambo podcast. It's brought to you this week by your Valley Chevy dealer. Please download that. You'll enjoy it. You can listen to it on the trail, at the gym, wherever you listen to any of your podcasts. You can enjoy Burns and Gambo like that. A lot of us today have been looking at the Cardinals' future, but coming up next, we'll take you through Vance Joseph's thoughts on his team's performance against Seattle next on the Burns and Gambo Show. Let's update our Twitter poll question of the day. Let's turn it back over to Eric here on the Burns and Gambo Show. He's got an update for us.
Burns and Gambo need to know Twitter poll update presented by Sanderson Ford.
It's all the question about whether Herm Edwards will be, not should be, but will be the coach. Yeah. Big difference in the tone of the question based off of that one word right there for the bowl game, whenever it might be. They still have the Territorial Cup on Saturday, but then after that, ASU's going to go to a bowl game. Just the question of whether Herm Edwards will be the coach for that bowl game.
Yeah, and that one tricky word has probably led us to, I mean, I've only been on the show for a little bit of time now. One of the closest polls of all time.
Wow.
Yes, 50.7%. No, 49.3%.
It's close.
Yeah.
It's close.
And you're in the yes camp, right?
I voted no. Then I changed my mind. I think he's going to, you know what, I think out of respect, I mean, this isn't, you're not going to leave with bad blood. These are friends. I mean, Ray's friends. They're not going to fire him and don't coach the game. And you don't have to worry about, you know, him going somewhere else. And you don't have to worry about, taking assistance with him. And there's nobody on the staff that I believe is going to be the next head coach that you want to say, okay, get your feet wet with this guy. I think out of respect, they'll let him coach that game. Let him finish out.
It's just, I guess you're right. To me, the other question is whether he'll resign, you know, and that's another element to this as well that John Wilner, our buddy at the San Jose Mercury News, has brought up a couple of occasions. Will Herm kind of take the decision out of their hands, and will he resign as head coach of ASU? I don't know. It's just kind of speculation at this point. It might not matter in the final analysis whether he's fired or whether he resigns, but I guess he could potentially do it before they even play the bowl game, right? And take the decision out of Ray Anderson's hands.
Here's what I honestly believe. I honestly believe that if he was coming back, they would have announced it, And that way, because that could have resettled a lot of the recruiting issues that are going on right now. So that's why I don't think he's coming back, because it'd be stupid not to. If he's definitely coming back, just say it. He's our coach next year. He wants to come back. We want him back. And that way, you know, you know when you're recruiting, you could say he's our coach.
Yeah, big time. All right, so that's the poll question. You can find it on the Burns and Gambo Twitter page, at Burns and Gambo. One word there if you want to vote on that poll question today. Speaking of guys that in this circumstance we hope come back, we hope Vance Joseph comes back as the defensive coordinator of the Cards. That goes without saying with the work that this defense has done, not just this year, but over the last 2 years. The guy is a de facto defensive head coach for this team, which has him even sounding like a head coach when he talks about how great it was to go 2-1 without the starting quarterback and without the star wide receiver.
Well, that's huge, you know. Not having your quarterback for 3 weeks and winning 2 out of 3, especially divisional games, that's huge for your team. Most teams lose their quarterback and they probably lose all three, you know. So for us to win 2 out of 3, especially those guys, those games in division, that's huge for our team. And obviously Hop's a big part of our team also. He's one of our better players, you know, and to win in this league, having your best players available is always important. But to win 2 out of 3, that's huge for our team, and it gives your entire team confidence that if you do lose your quarterback in the playoffs, you know, or late in the year, you have a guy who can win for you. So obviously that's awesome for Colton.
Like he has all year, Gambo. He just sounds like a head coach, doesn't he?
He just does. Here's your defensive coordinator talking about Colt McCoy, the backup quarterback.
Yeah. Yeah, it almost sounds like he's practicing for a head coaching job again. You know, he's been one for a couple of years, but that's a very head coach-like answer. Now, look, I don't know. I bet he ends up interviewing for a few openings. I'm sure that will happen based off of the success they have. Does he get any of them? Does he want any of them? I mean, some of the jobs that might come open might not be the most desirable of head coaching jobs. Do you want one badly enough that you're willing to go work for a bad organization? Or will the Cardinals give you a nice bump in salary to make sure you stay around and you can really be picky and choosy about what head coaching job you take? I hope that's what he does and he doesn't just jump at the first thing that comes down the pike.
No, that's why I think there's going to be a couple of interesting things here. I think that Cliff's going to get extended, because I think, you know, this could be the last year. Not going to go into next year with the chance that you could lose him. So I think Cliff will be extended. I also think Keim will be extended. And then I think you'll look at Vance's contract and you'll set. And I would imagine he's one of the higher paid defensive coordinators in the league. Mm-hmm. But I imagine you bump that salary up even more. So that way he doesn't just jump at anything. Yeah, that way it isn't just, you make him one of the highest paid coordinators, offensive or defenses, in the entire NFL. And that way he doesn't, you know, feel like I'm going to jump at this job because it's that much more money. That way he could wait. And I think it's inevitable that he's going to get a job. Now, but I'd love to hold on to him for one more year. But I think, you know, Cliff would also probably love to see him get an opportunity to be a head coach because he deserves it.
Yeah, it's crazy. And we've mentioned this. I've mentioned this a couple of times. It's crazy how this works in this league. If the roles were reversed and Vance Joseph was the head coach and Cliff Kingsbury were the offensive coordinator, Cliff would be gone. Gone, gone, gone. He'd be somebody's head coach in the blink of an eye when this season ended for the Cardinals. But because the opposite is true, and because Vance is the defensive guy, I just don't know it's as automatic, because there is, it's not 100%, but there is certainly an inclination to hire offensive-minded head coach versus defensive-minded head coaches. And I do wonder if that works against Vance a little bit this offseason.
Yeah, no, maybe. I mean, but, you know, if you're looking for a leader, like, the most important thing is not offense and defense. It's a leader. Who could be a leader of my team? You know, who's going to get the most out of my team? Vance is a leader. I mean, Vance, you could just listen to him talk. You remember Steve Wilkes at the end, man? I'm blaming, you know, he was blaming everybody. Like, you'll never get that out of Vance.
Yeah.
Steve Wilkes at the end was blaming everybody but himself for the job. Like, we had the game plan. They didn't execute it. Like, okay, man, you're like, you knew he was done right then and there.
Yeah, big time.
Yeah, Vance is a leader. Those guys, you know, guys are going to run through a wall for him. And look, he'll hire a great offensive coordinator. He's been in this league. He's been a head coach. I think that it depends on the jobs. He's not the big flashy name that some people may want, right? He's not the big flashy name. But if he gets interviewed, I think he's going to blow some teams away. If it's not, I would bet a house payment that he gets a job within the next 2 years. It may not be this year, but it's coming.
This is one more from Vance Joseph. I want to play this because in a season that started with questions about why Zaven Collins was being handed the job at inside linebacker despite having not earned it, he didn't get any snaps defensively against Seattle. None. And here's Vance Joseph on why.
He's doing fine, Darren. You know, he got nicked a couple weeks ago. You know, he missed a couple weeks of practice, and I kind of set him back a little bit. But he's back, and he's repping. He's getting better and better every single day. You know, most rookies, you know, it's really on their terms as far as how fast they grow. And he was doing a good job and playing really well for us, and he got nicked. And he missed a couple of weeks of practice, and I kind of slowed him down a little bit. And Tanner obviously was playing good football for us. And during that time, you know, he played so well, you know, I didn't want to change it back to Zaven, you know, being a full-time guy in our star package. So, but he's back and he's working and he's looking forward to get more reps next week.
Yeah, zero snaps against Seattle. He had 23 against Carolina for about 31%. Three snaps against San Francisco for 5%. Three snaps against Green Bay for 4%. Look, this is obviously not an issue. They're 9-2. Steve Keim is the leading candidate for executive of the year in the NFL for all the moves that he's made. So no one's going to hold it against him that his first-round pick didn't contribute that much. But in any other year, Gambo, you know as well as I do, this would be a story, right? This would be something people are talking about, but nobody is because they're 9-2 and they're winning and it doesn't matter.
Well, yeah, you know, I'm surprised that it had, because they're 9-2, but I'm a little surprised at how, you remember the discussion with the Suns on not taking Tyrese Halliburton? That discussion. Why they should have taken Tyrese Halliburton. Why did they take Jalen Smith?
Yeah, yeah,
right.
That conversation. Yes.
Micah Parsons is killing it right now for the Cowboys.
He sure
is. He's killing it.
Sure is.
I mean, he is one of the best rookies in the entire NFL. You know. So you start to look at, you know, rookie of the year offensively and defensively. He's been a beast. Parsons.
Yep.
So, you know, could you have had him? Should you have taken him? Is that, you know, so Zaven Collins, they didn't like Micah Parsons that much, but they loved Zaven Collins, but they didn't love Parsons. But Micah Parsons has been absolutely great. I'm surprised that hasn't come up as to, you know, should they have taken Micah Parsons over Zaven Collins?
Well, now, I mean, he wasn't available. I just looked back at the draft.
Right, he wasn't available.
He was the 12th pick, and Zaven Collins was the 16th. I couldn't remember where he went, but...
Right, but that was the... They didn't want him. Like, even if he was available, they didn't... You're right, because Halliburton, they could have had, they didn't have him. But Parsons has played, even just looking at it, Parsons has played so much better. And he's a big part of that Dallas defense, where Zaven... Look, maybe next year will be the year for Zaven. You know, maybe next year will be the year where they, you know, like kind of like Isaiah, you know, in this defense, it takes a year to really understand it and learn it before you get to excel.
Yeah, maybe when it's all said and done. When we come back, it's been a roller coaster of a season for ASU and Herm Edwards, and we're still not sure how this ride is going to end. There's lots of different possibilities where they could be playing in December. We'll go through some of them next here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station, Burns and Gambo.
The season that started with such promise, a season that even if it had ended ultimately in some sort of investigation or sanctions or punishments or anything like that, I think a lot of ASU fans would have taken a Rose Bowl appearance on the 25th anniversary of their last Rose Bowl appearance, even if the price to pay was sanctions or punishments or anything like that. But it's obvious that that is now not going to happen for ASU with their disappointing losses this season. And now, Gambo, we're kind of left to figure out. They're going to go to a decent bowl because they've had a decent season. But that's not what any of our expectations were or our hopes were for this season for the Sun Devils.
No, they go into a mediocre bowl because that's what they are. They're a mediocre football team. And it's I'm sad that I bought into it. I really bought into this was going to be the season. Jaden was going to take that next step. He's regressed. He's gotten worse.
Yeah.
I thought that this defense was going to be, and a defense at times has been really good, but they've got all seniors. I never, in my wildest dreams, that they'd be the most undisciplined football team that we've ever seen in our lives with the penalties. I mean, even in his last game, three penalties on one drive, all four-star penalties. I mean, come on.
It was awful.
I mean, it's just disgusting.
It's just awful. It was so hard to watch.
I mean, that alone. I mean, you just, you played all these games. You don't have this figured out yet. I mean, you can't practice this. Like, come on. It's embarrassing. It's humiliating. You know, some people may be able to say it was a decent season. It's not good enough. It's got to be better. Like, it has to be better than what it is right now. And, you know, it's down to the same thing it always is. Hey, it's the U of A game. Let's beat our rival. I mean, that's what everybody strives for. You've got to want more out of ASU football than just the rivalry game. The Territorial Cup has got to be more than that.
It should be, and yet it never seems to be with ASU. And we've spent, I mean, you and I have done this show together now for 10 and a half years, and you and I have both been on the air in this market long enough, even before we were doing this show, where this has just always been the story of ASU football. Always, no matter what coach comes in here, no matter what promises are made, no matter what glimmer of hope that you have, the truth of the matter is that I think they've got three 10-win seasons in the last 20 years. I'd have to go back and look for sure. It's just a program that could never reach that elite state, and certainly if they do, they could never stay there. They did the back-to-back 10-win seasons with Todd Graham, but then it just fell apart after that. And so now I'm looking through these bowl projections, whether it's Stuart Mandel, whether it's ESPN, whether it's our buddy John Wilner from the San Jose Mercury News. I'm somewhat impressed that some of them say the Holiday Bowl. Wilner in particular said it's a real interesting call for the Holiday Bowl. They would have their choice of ASU versus Washington State. And then he writes, we think there's a chance Herm Edwards steps down before the bowl, which would be suboptimal for pregame buzz. But, you know, they're kind of pointing out that the Holiday might have to choose between ASU or Washington State, and Washington State's been there more recently. I don't know where they're going to end up. I don't know who's going to be coaching them in the bowl game. But whatever it is, it's going to be a giant letdown from what we were expecting.
It is, because this year should have been about – it doesn't have to be about the playoffs, but it should have been about winning the Pac-12 South, playing for a Pac-12 championship – And winning that and going to the Rose Bowl. Based on what they had, this season was set up for a lot of success. That's what it should have been about. And now we're talking about, look, there's some projections that, you know, the Vegas Bowl. Like, nobody's going to care about the Vegas Bowl. Like, nobody's going to care. I went back and I looked at it. You know, when was the last time Arizona State won a really good bowl game? 1986, Rose Bowl. Honestly, that's the last time. If you take out, like, the Insight Bowl and the Sun Bowl, I mean, the last time they won a good bowl game, you got to go back to the 1986 season with Van Rapphorst. That's how long it's been since they've won a bowl game. You know, that was a good game. I don't know. It's frustrating. And this was the year that it was all set up for success. If I can't imagine that they'll lose to U of A. U of A's playing better now, but ASU is just so much more talented this year. So they should win that game, and then we'll just wait and see what bowl invitation they get.
Yeah, Michael Lev, he is the beat writer who covers U of A football and baseball for the Arizona Daily Star. He pointed out on his Twitter account about an hour ago that Arizona and Arizona State are two of the most penalized teams in the nation. Should be a good time on Saturday. And yet Herm Edwards, when he was on our morning show, Bickley and Murata, yesterday, said, you know, we're expecting a very motivated U of A team after beating them 70-7 last year.
Oh, there's no doubt. And you watch them play. They're very competitive. They're a very competitive football team. And those coaches have done a good job, and the players have done a good job. Every week they're competing. They've fallen short sometimes. There's some games they could have won easily. A couple plays here or there, and they could have won a couple more games. So I think, you know, you realize that as a coach. And I think players, they'll see it on film. You turn the film on, just watch them compete.
Yeah, apparently they've closed down ranks down there in Tucson, too. Michael Lev also reported yesterday, no more media access for Arizona football this week. That Jed Fish has shut it down. No one's talking to anybody when it comes to the media this week. I think he really wants his guys as focused as they can be on trying to spring what would be a pretty big upset against ASU. I mean, that would – okay, we talk about this game not meaning anything for ASU. You can't tell me it doesn't mean anything for U of A with the season they've had. That this would be – this would make up for an awful lot of yuck if U of A could beat ASU.
You're 100% right. You know, for Arizona State, you win, you're supposed to win – and then you wait and you see what bowl game you go to. Holiday Bowl is a good bowl game. I mean, you'll get a good opponent. It'll be a good game if you can get to the Holiday Bowl. I mean, anything under that, I think, you know, people are going to be disappointed. You should be disappointed anyway because it's not a Pac-12 championship. It's not a Rose Bowl. But Holiday Bowl, it's a quality bowl game. I will say that now before the announcements come out. Let's see what happens. But for U of A, it's been a miserable season. It's Fish's first year. They won one game against the Cal team that was missing 22 players because of COVID protocols in Berkeley. If they win this game, it's huge. I mean, they're gonna party like it's 1999. I mean, that would be, I mean, to lose the way they did last year, and if they could come back and win this game, I mean, that would really help the program out. Look, we'll see what's going to happen with this investigation and recruiting, whether the tide turns and U of A is able to turn the corner and, you know, start bringing in better players and, you know, maybe even get better than Arizona State. I don't know. I mean, time will tell based on what the investigation is going to show. But absolutely, U of A wins this game. Look, I don't know. I mean, maybe if Arizona State loses this game, maybe Herm doesn't coach the bowl game because nobody's going to want him to.
And I don't
just think about the embarrassment as an Arizona State fan if you lose this football game to a team that's won one game all year to and they beat a team that was missing 22 players.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not ruling it out. I'm not saying it can't happen. I haven't seen what the point spread is for this weekend's game. I don't know this one. If you're ASU, be very, very careful with this one because this is their bowl game. This is their everything. This is their all that and a side of chips kind of game. And they're whatever they've got, I don't know if it's good enough. I don't know if 100% of U of A is good enough to beat 80% of ASU. Probably not, but we'll see because they're going to put 100% of everything they've got into springing that upset against ASU.
As down as I am on ASU, God, I cannot see them losing that game.
I can't either.
I just can't.
I can't either, but it's one of those, you know, a lot of times in moments. Okay, take your typical bowl game, right? Your typical bowl game is usually won by the team who, quite frankly, is more interested in being there, right? A lot of teams go to bowl games, and they're disappointed because they didn't get to the bowl game they wanted to go to, or they didn't make it to the Rose Bowl, or they didn't make it to the championship game. I'm kind of worried about this game the way I'd be worried about something like that. Like U of A, they're going to want this so badly. Their desperation is going to be so much more intense than ASU.
Yeah, but it doesn't mean they can win.
It doesn't mean they can. No,
you may want it, but it doesn't mean you're going to get it.
It just means it makes me worry about this game from ASU because that would be just the kind of bad luck. Not even bad luck. It would just be kind of the exclamation point on this disappointing season. So hopefully
you just got to hand the ball to White and train them and run all over them the first couple of series and make them believe that they can't beat you, right? Yeah. If you're ASU, they think they can beat you. That's what I'm saying. If I'm hurt, they think they can beat you. Everything is on the line for them. This is their Super Bowl. This is everything to them. You come out of the gates with one of those 12-play, 80-yard drives, and you run it right down their throats, you'll take their belief away.
Yeah, big time.
You'll take their belief. Two drives like that, you'll take their belief away. They'll know they can't beat you.
Texas, your thoughts on this game. The FanDuel text line is open for you right now. It's 620-620 when we come back. If you somehow didn't already think this Cardinals team is a legit Super Bowl contender, well, trust us, that's not just us saying it. We'll react to who else is mentioning the Cardinals next on the Burns and Gambo Show.